Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Send Mum Club podcast, which is the parenting podcast with a difference. I'm your host, Gemma. And if this is your first time listening, thank you so much for joining. And if you're a regular listener, as always, thank you so much for being here, maybe every week. I know some of you are. So, before we get started with this week's episode, this is going to be me signing off for the summer. So I was going to carry on until the end of term, although I know some people's kids have already broken up, which is wild. But with my middle child, Millie, she does dancing. So if you are a dance mum, you will know that it's like end of term exams, end of term shows, and I am stacked with work and we're going on holiday. So when I looked at my diary for next week, I was like, absolutely no chance I'm going to get any time to sit down and give a podcast episode the love and the time that it needs. So this will be my last one for the summer, although I have got some brilliant people booked in to record with over the summer. So I'm going to be getting some excellent episodes ready for you when we come back after the holidays in September. But on to this week's episode. And I'm delighted with who's on this week, I have to say. So Amy Draper is somebody that I met through a friend ages and ages ago. And then we connected on a deeper level when Amy got pregnant and was told that her baby had a very high chance of having Down syndrome. So Amy was messaging me, I guess, for some advice and some support because she went through the majority of her pregnancy thinking that the baby would have Down syndrome. Now, when he was born, he didn't. He had something else, which is very, very rare. And that's why Amy wanted to come onto the podcast to talk about the syndrome that her son Donnie has. Amy talks about how difficult she's finding the lack of community because this syndrome is so rare, and also the lack of a plan, as she puts it, from the hospital in terms of what are their next steps, what support does Donnie need, what can they be doing as a family to help him. Amy also talks about her experience of being offered a termination throughout her pregnancy because of this diagnosis, even though it was wrong. And the impact that that had on her having to have those conversations. Now, I do just want to flag that we talk about baby loss in this episode. If you feel like that's something that wouldn't be good for you to listen to today, then maybe listen to this episode at another time, or even not at all if you feel like that wouldn't be the right thing for you to do. I love Amy's energy in this episode. The way she talks about her children is beautiful. And although, as I've mentioned, I do know Amy, I haven't really ever had the chance to sit down and have this full in-depth discussion with her about her journey so far. So I was really, really happy to have this chat, and I really hope that you enjoy it. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
We met ages ago through a friend.
Yeah.
And then we were in contact kind of separately from that when you were pregnant, which we will get onto in a minute. But before we start, how many children have you got? Just run me through them because you're busy.
Busy. So I've got five children. I've got four with me. One is sadly passed away when he was a baby. And then I've got a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old and an 18-month-old.
Just run me through their names.
So I've got Charlie, Dolly, Winnie, Reenie and Donnie.
I love those names so much. So beautiful. Now, you are predominantly here to talk about Donnie, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Let's start from the beginning. What happened in your pregnancy? Because something was flagged, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the beginning of the pregnancy, around 12, 13 weeks, we had our normal scan. We'd already had a scan before that and it was fine, just maybe a little bit small. But I tend to have them kinds of babies, small babies anyway. So I wasn't concerned. I was just like, yeah, that's fine. But when they started to scan, Donnie was my fifth baby, but when I had my first baby, Charlie, I'd been through all this before. Like, obviously, I'd been through all the pregnancy scans, but what was different about Donnie's is it was so similar to Charlie's. When they started to scan, they started to revisit the same spot on the back of the neck. And as a neonatal nurse, I, I knew what that meant. And for me, that meant probably Downs. However, obviously it can indicate other things like Edwards and Patau syndrome. And I was a bit like, okay, I just knew. And then they said, let's go down that corridor and let's walk and we'll get some bloods and we'll do this and we'll do that. And I was just like, oh, not again. Not again. I can't go through this. So we did that. And then they said, if you don't hear anything, then it's likely to be okay, that, you know, back from the bloods. So they were like, because his neck measurements are just on the border of abnormal, it was like, if the bloods are fine, then you're probably fine. So I was thinking, oh, well, that's okay. And 3 weeks had passed and I hadn't heard anything. So my husband said, oh, ring the midwife. And I was like, no, there wouldn't be an issue because it's been so long. And when I spoke to the midwife, she was like, no, you've got a really high chance for Downs. And we've spoke about this before, Gem, and the wording of that, was it, I don't know whether...
Did they say risk rather than chance?
Yeah. Risk, that's what it was.
Yeah.
At risk of Downs. And I was like, okay. And then the soul searching began. And I don't want that to sound at all derogatory in any way to any other parents.
I think that's just normal, babe. I think I can't imagine anybody being told that and having no reaction and no choice to make. Everybody would. So please don't feel that that's something negative to say.
Because I already had three children who were quite young at the time, I was thinking, how would that look in my life if the baby has got Downs? Now, I know that we could cope with that, but it's not just about me and Lee. It's about our children and the wider family. Obviously, you don't make decisions about your wider family, but you have to look at your other children and think, are they going to cope with that? Now, I've got a few friends like you and a few other friends who've got children with Downs, and they bring so much light and so much wonder and so much joy into our worlds that, to me, that choice was never really a choice. It was just a choice if it would have been Edwards or Patau syndrome. Therefore, the chance of them living after birth is very slim. And I really wouldn't have wanted to bury another child because I don't think anyone wants to do that. So there was lots of difficult conversations and there was lots of support given. Like, you know, I reached out to you, I reached out to a couple of other friends, and I thought, no, I think we can do this. And obviously my husband, Lee, said the same. And he was like, of course we can, you know, it makes no difference. This baby will be brought up with lots of love and lots of input, like we like to do with our children. And they'll be okay. And that's it, really. So that was sort of our decision made. But it was at 17 weeks as well. And 17 weeks, you've got a bump, haven't you? You know, that's a big decision.
Yeah. And I suppose because that would have been your fifth baby, I feel like you feel the move earlier, the more. So could you feel him moving already?
I could feel it. He was so active as well. Yeah. He was such an active baby in my tummy. And he'd be on the button every day. It'd be the same time, the same movement, same. And he still doesn't sleep now. But yeah, I'm just great. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for all the support that was around me at the time that enabled me to make the choice that we feel that it was the best choice for us.
Can I ask, how was that choice presented to you? Do you feel like, because that is an option, we all know as SEN parents, or maybe we don't, but probably most people know that there are certain conditions that if your baby is flagged as having, you will be offered a termination. I haven't been in that position. Do you think that was handled well with you, sensitively, or?
Not really. It was more, it was direct. It was amnio or it was termination. And for me, neither of them options felt right. So I just said no, first off. And then it was offered quite a few times and continually throughout the pregnancy, to the point where I had to actually say, this has got to stop now. I can't take it in anymore. I don't want them choices. I don't even want to hear the words. Because going back to when you have lost a child, it's really difficult to have that choice presented and again and again and again. And you're just like, no. And I remember sitting in the fetal medicine unit, and there's like a little office, and the woman was on the phone, and she said to this mum who'd obviously rang up, who'd took the choice of termination. And she said, and I heard her on the phone saying, no, we don't offer funerals for terminations. Now, when you're making that choice, you're not making that choice because you want to, or you just want to get end of pregnancy. You're making that choice because your baby is sick, that baby is wanted. And I remember listening to that, and I was nearly crying, and I was just like, no, I'm done, I'm out, I'm not, there's no way.
That's made me fill up that, because like you said, that's not a, oh God, we've had an accident, I didn't mean to get pregnant, this isn't the right timing. Okay. And I'm not saying I count myself very lucky. I've never had to make that choice in any capacity. So I'm sure it isn't that simple. I shouldn't have made it sound so blasé then. But what you're talking about is a very, very different situation.
That's what I mean. That's where I'm coming from. And I wasn't obviously on the phone listening. I was just listening because I was in earshot. And I was like, that is horrific. You know, there should be something else. There should be, the honeysuckle scheme should be involved in that. Now, I don't know whether they are or not, because obviously we didn't follow that path.
Is that the bereavement team?
That's the bereavement team in the women's. And however, I was just like, that's just a bit rubbish and a bit shit for parents like us.
Absolutely. And I think especially given the laws, which I find extremely upsetting, the laws around those conditions that you can terminate later in pregnancy, you can terminate up to full term.
Yeah, I know, and I'm aware of that. And it's not like it's not pushed as well. You know, it's sort of like, well, do you actually want this child who's got potential to have major problems? Because Don had other issues, like his bowel was showing like lighted up things on the scan, and there was holes in his heart, and there was, you know, his femurs was small and stuff. And I was just like, no, not for me. That's because I've got a secure foundation. Not everyone's got a support network.
And also, I think, just trying to put myself in that situation, I feel like once you've made that decision, it doesn't feel right that it keeps being offered to you, because you know that's an option. They must have spelt that out quite clearly. These are your options. You can have this up until essentially you go into labour. Like, I don't really see the point, especially in your situation, you know, with Charlie, of repeatedly bringing that up again.
Yeah, it was. I found it really, really difficult at the time. And there was so much support during pregnancy. Like the scans were all the time. There was bloods all the time. There was monitoring all the time, even though his movements were fine. There was, you know, they were weighing him inside my tummy, and he was IUGR, and, you know, all of the, like, small birth weights and stuff like that. And it was difficult, but I did have a lot of people around me. And to be fair, the women's actually have a consultant on their neonatal team who is like a link between antenatal and postnatal for children who've got Downs or who do have a higher chance for Downs. They do have this consultant who rang me, and she was like, there's this support group and there's that support group. And that was quite helpful, I found.
So essentially from 12, 13 weeks, well, by the time you got the results, you're what, 16, 17 weeks?
17 weeks, yeah.
You've gone through the entire pregnancy thinking that your baby has Down syndrome. But as it turns out, he doesn't, does he?
No.
Was it immediately obvious that he didn't have Down syndrome or not?
Well, when he was born, he looks like he has a syndrome. However, he didn't look like he had Downs. And it was one of them, like, when he come out, the neonatal team come round and they checked him out, and he wasn't the wellest baby after being born. He did need a little stint on neonates. And it was like they'd done the fish straight away. I'm sure Leo would have had that, you know, like the initial test, it's like a quick test. And then they do like a longer, more in-depth test. Yeah.
What's the fish test? Sorry.
I'm not 100% sure, but that's how they explained it to me. They said, on the NHS, they said, we're going to do a fish test. And if that comes back with like, say like 90%, he has got Downs. Although he's got some features of Downs. So like he has like a single palmar crease. Obviously he's got wide spaced eyes, he's got lower set ears, but he didn't sort of look exactly like that. So it was one of them, well what is it? For me it was like, well, what is it? It must be, I know it's something, but what can it be? So we were in neonates for 2 weeks, and within that 2 weeks I was literally putting every single characteristic of him in. I was like, right, is it this? Is it this? Is it this? Is it this? And then eventually I come across this syndrome called Arskog-Scott syndrome. And when I was looking at these babies and their characteristics, I was like, this is it. So I went into the neonatal unit and I said to this registrar, I think it's this. And she said to me, well, you could look forever and you might not find anything. And I was just like, okay, well, you just haven't dealt with what I've dealt with for the last 9 months. So I want to know. They said, oh, do you want full genetics after the second Downs test come back? And I was like, yeah, I do. I want to know.
Well, of course. You need to know.
They were like, well, he's fine. And this particular registrar was like, he's absolutely fine. And I was like, but that's not the case. That's not what I've been told the whole way through pregnancy. So I need to know. So we went ahead and got the full genetics, and it did take a long time. It took 12 months to get it. But it was that Arskog-Scott syndrome. And I just, as a mum, you just know, don't you? Like, you just have this feeling and probably this fight inside you that I need to know this for him. Not for me. Well, a little bit for me, but for him to be able to best support him, I need to know what's going on. So that's when we found that out.
How did you feel though when that test for Down syndrome came back negative? Because see, I was in a different situation to you, because we got a postnatal diagnosis with Leo. So I didn't have that anxiety and the stress throughout the pregnancy, which I'm very grateful for. I think there's probably pros and cons of both, because it came as such a huge shock to us. However, there's, I suppose, as with a lot of conditions and syndromes, Down syndrome is so wide ranging. You know, 60% of children who have Down syndrome do end up needing heart surgery. So that's something you must have been aware of. So there's all these, you know, it's not something where you can go, okay, my baby's going to have Down syndrome and that means this, and that's what it's going to look like. So you must have gone through all of that. But then to then be told, no, it's not that, but you have a feeling that there is something going on. Like, mentally, how did you process that? Because that's a lot.
Well, I do feel like we've been in limbo for a very long time and we're still there now. We haven't got a doctor who, every single doctor that I've met, Jem, has gone, I don't know what that means. I am so grateful that Don is okay and he's alive. But I think if he would have had Downs, I would have had a plan. I would have had support. I would have had arms around, not that that never happened from my wider circle, but I mean
more of a community.
There's nowhere to go. There's only one other boy in Merseyside who's got the same syndrome. It's one in a million, and no one knows what they're doing or what they're talking about, or it's quite hard to and I feel like it's a constant fight. Like I spoke to our lovely general Pete, who's trying to get a plan for us last week, and he was like, well, I'll see you in December. And I was like, December? He's not going to be top to toe till December. Like, there's things going on for him, and I feel like I don't want to harm them, but I want to help him out. He struggles a little bit with his hands, because that can be a characteristic of Arsgog, and he can't wave yet. He can't, you know, if he has a bottle of milk, he can't hold the bottle properly. And I don't want that to affect him as he moves forward, you know, through his toddler years, where he's unable to maybe draw, mark make, paint, bake, cook, all of these things that are so important as little people are growing up. It's like, you need your hands. So it's, you know, we're not seeing occupational therapy till July, which probably could have, you know, I had to massage his hands every single day. And I said to the doctor, oh, I've been massaged, because when he was born, they were like that, like little claws. And the doctor was like, well, that wouldn't have done anything anyway. And I was like, well, I don't know what else to do. I don't know who to go to. You're not giving me any services, any charities, anything at all. There's been no leaflets from the hospital. There's been no nothing. Like, I've searched for, we've got one charity that we can speak to, but there's only like 360 members in it. It's called the Arsgog, Arsgog Scott Syndrome World Charity. It's something, I'll check it out and I'll let you know, so you can link it in case anyone's listening. And they are really helpful, but again, if it would have been Downs, there would have been more knowledge at post-delivery. There'd have been more support. There'd been support groups. There'd been mums like me who I could just go, oh, Jem, what about this? Or what about that? Whereas, like, I feel very, like, I'm a bit floundering. And I'm not that kind. Like, I've been a mum for 16 years. I know what I'm doing. But we don't know what we're doing when we come across crossings in the road like this, where we've got there's no roadmap. We just have to navigate it ourselves. And I'm sure that every Sen mum has been in that position at one point in their life, and they're like, I don't know where to go. I don't know where to go with this. I don't know who to speak to, you know. And I think that's difficult for mums like us in this position. So when I had Doll 10 years ago, she was born without a thyroid. So her thyroid was just not present in her body at all. And when we left the women's, we went straight to Alder Hey. We had a meeting with the consultant. He gave me a plan. He told me this, that. And it was just phenomenal. Like, the care was absolutely gold standards. And I just assumed that when I had this baby who was potentially going to be poorly and all of that, that would be even more so. We would have a plan. We would have this, that, the next thing. We wouldn't be 18 months down the line and not have a specialist.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I get it in some ways, because weirdly, my Millie was born, she doesn't have no thyroid, but it was incredibly underdeveloped. So I'd imagine it would be the same plan. You know, it's lifelong thyroxine. It's looking out for this. It's, you know, the blood tests every 6 months and all of that. But that's a very specific thing, isn't it? I suppose that they know how to deal with. It's managed completely. Oh, I'm assuming that your Dolly's the same. It's managed completely by medication. As long as they take the right amount of medication, they're fine, essentially. But I suppose this is so much more nuanced, especially in your case, isn't it? Can you just tell me, I obviously I've heard you when you say that the doctors are saying they don't really know, but what is your understanding of what this syndrome means for him?
A lot of it is to do with their hands and their feet. And obviously they have like facial characteristics of children who have syndromes, but also it can delay their growth. It can delay the onset of puberty. It can delay whether they can have children. Well, it can interfere with the fact that whether they can have children or not. Now, Don's already had two surgeries last year, like an oxyopexy where they pull, when their testicles aren't coming down.
Oh, Leo's had to have that, yeah.
Yeah. And then he's had a hernia as well, because lots of children are... Yeah. Which, to be fair, was absolutely fine. That wasn't an issue.
Yeah, same.
It was dealt with really quickly and superbly. But I think he's going to need the other one doing. He had one and then the other one was fine. And then they said, oh, maybe the other one needs doing as well, which is fine.
And they don't do them both at the same time, do they? They just do the one because we're in exactly the same position.
Yeah. So, it's just sort of that. Will he need growth hormone? Is there anything else? Is he going to be, he's probably going to have a smaller stature. He's going to have, they said, well, from the research, it's like 99% of the children have learning needs. So that looks like ADD, ADHD, all stuff like that, which I can half already see now, because the baby doesn't sleep. He's awake, like last night, he was awake for 3 hours in the night. I was like, please,
oh God,
go to sleep. But we've all been there, and, there will be strategies. I just don't know what they are yet, Gem. And I'm not sure how it's going to look or how it's going to play out. But I just want to have more of a plan to enable him to reach the best of his ability.
Yeah.
Like all mums.
Of course. So what is in place for him at the minute? Like, is he having physio? I know you said he isn't having OT yet.
No, we haven't had any physio at all. Because they haven't put anything in place yet, we're seeing the OT. He sees the doctors about his eyes, because his eyes are a bit of a funny shape and they just need to keep an eye on that. And he sees general Pete, in the next few months, we'll be seeing endocrine as well. He hasn't got low tone, but when he was born, he was like stiff as a board, very hypertonic. That, like, he was more like, he wasn't floppy at all. He was more tight. And I had he would do this sort of shaking thing. And I'd go to the doctor and I'd be ringing all the hay. Like, it looks like he's seizing, but he's not seizing. But he still does it now. So I don't know what it is. And they were like, no, he's not seizing. That's just him. And there's a lot of that, that's just the way he is. And I'm like, is it? Because I've had other children and that doesn't feel right. But I just hope that there's more research in the future and there's more knowledge around it. And because there's going to be more children born with it. When we got our diagnosis, I found out that I am the carrier. My sister's a carrier. My girls are carriers as well. And that means that they will potentially have children born. If they have boys, it's more of a boy-related illness. Not illness, syndrome. What they can do now is they can sort of change the egg and the sperm so that the baby doesn't have that. That trace is there for my children and my sister, from what the charity has said to me, because Don's being dead lucky. Like, his hole in his heart is okay. We're going to see who are the heart people? Cardiology. We're going to see cardiology just to double check, but he hasn't needed a surgery. But I know that that is got a high chance. And we were very lucky. Leo didn't have surgery, did he?
No, it's so funny. So many of the things you're saying are like a parallel to us. Like, different diagnosis, as it turns out. But Leo was exactly the same. So he was, our situation was a little different because I had Leo at home, as you know. So all of the tests that he would have had he been born in hospital were hugely delayed just because that's their process. I think if you have a baby that is flagged as having Down syndrome and you're born in the hospital, I think you almost immediately have the first heart scan, where Leo didn't have his until he was like 9 months old. And it had got to the point where everyone, and they can't say this because obviously medical professionals have to be really careful how they phrase things, don't they? Understandably. They were basically saying if there was a heart problem, you'd know. Like, and so that therefore they didn't rush this heart scan. So then when we had it and they were like, yeah, he's got a hole in his heart, again, massive shock, because we were like, ah, he's fine. He's not showing any signs of anything to do with his heart. But then the same, it's basically, it's something like, they told us the stats, I think it's about 30% of adults are living, or of people are living with a small hole in their heart, and it just doesn't affect them. And they'd never have a reason to know, because they've never had a reason to have a heart scan. And Leo's heart is growing and the hole is staying the same size. I think that's what it is. But basically, we've been discharged. And they were like, he shouldn't go deep sea diving. He shouldn't have a lot of piercings and tattoos. And that's essentially it. Like, and we have to make sure that we keep his teeth really clean, which is not happening because he despises having his teeth cleaned.
So does Dan.
So, you know. But it's weird, isn't it? Like, there's so many things you're saying about Don. And I'm like, yep, same. Yep, same. Yeah. Same, 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 same.
Yeah. Literally, it's like, and I agree, like, when Don was born, we went onto the ward, you know, like, afterwards. And I had a little sleep. Like, it was the next day. It was New Year's Day. Leah had gone home. I'd set my alarm on my phone and I thought, baby's having a sleep. I'll just have a 15-minute, 20-minute sleep and then I'll get back up with him. And one of the healthcare's had come in to put me dinner down and he was blue. So she obviously pulled the emergency buzzer.
Oh, God.
And they obviously resuscitated them and took them round to neonates and done a heart scan straight away, which just showed like small, really small holes in his heart. And then he come back round and I was like, oh, great, I'll go and get a shot. We were on transitional care, so like nurses that I knew, obviously, because I worked in the women's, were looking after him while I nipped in to get a shower. And then the alarm started going off and I was like, oh, poor mum, poor baby. And I walked out and then I was like, oh, it's my baby. And off we went back round again and stayed there for a few nights thinking, oh, my God, could he just go off again at any time when we go home? And I think that's when I was, well, we've always had breathing monitors for our kids. I literally still have them on now, even though he's 18 months, because the thought of putting him down, like from when we brought him home, every single night, I would think he's going to die tonight. Tonight's going to be the night he's going to die. And this went on, well, it's not as bad now, but this went on constantly. And they'd be like, Amy's not going to die. And if he stops breathing, we have the monitor. And I'd be like, yeah, okay, but what if he does die? What if he does die? But it's just it's a horrible place to be, isn't it? Sometimes your own mind, when you've had loss and then you've got something else that's not dissimilar, because Charlie, we never had a post-mortem on Charlie, but from what I've read through his notes, he had the same features as Don. So he probably did have Arsgog syndrome, but we just chose not to have any more, you know, invasive treatment after he passed away.
Yeah. How did that feel then, getting the same diagnosis again?
Charlie didn't have that diagnosis. He had something called gastroschisis. He was born, I had had an internal bleed and he was starved of oxygen because my placenta had come away from the wall of my uterus. So we didn't know, but when he come out, he was hypoxic at birth. You know, his brain wasn't getting enough oxygen that it needed. And that's why he died, essentially. He needed surgery and stuff anyway, but he wasn't fit for that. But he had dysmorphic features. You know, like, that's what was written in the notes at the time. He's got dysmorphic. They look quite similar, even though Charlie was darker hair, and Don's obviously a redhead. But looking at the pictures side by side, they look really quite similar. So it was probably the same condition. I'm just surmising, but I think that was probably the case.
But you saying about you know, you and other family members carrying the gene, I suppose that probably makes sense, doesn't it? And also you saying that it's a boy thing and the rest of your children are girls, aren't they?
Yeah. And like, obviously, the girls haven't had any of the issues that the boys have had, other than Darlene, thyroid. But that's got nothing to do with that. So, yeah, I do think, and that was another reason why we were like, that's it. We're not going to have any more children now because we don't know the outcomes of how it could be.
And you've got a lot on,
yeah.
To be fair.
Just a bit. But, I mean, obviously, Lee was like, we're not having any more anyway. But that was my, like, I don't think it'd be fair on the children if I had another child who had possibly, you know, did need open heart surgery, because that is next level for everyone involved. It's trauma, isn't it? Even if it goes well, it's stress inducing for siblings, and it's not fair. So that's why.
Would you say your rating on the acceptance scale? Like, I know you've just said about this anxiety about him going to sleep, and I suppose I don't want to word this wrong, and I don't want to get it wrong because it's such a serious subject that we're talking about. But I suppose for mums who haven't gone through loss, it would be easier to say, of course the baby won't die, where you have gone through that. So it's not, I would imagine, as easy to talk yourself out of those thoughts.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, Jen, because I know that that's just PTSD. And in my rational nurse brain, I'm like, that's just PTSD, put it to bed. But even like, so when Don had been obviously unwell in the hospital, and then he'd been on the neonatal unit and he was having a CPAP machine was on his mouth. And then Lee had gone home. He was sorting the girls, fine. You know, I was fine with the CPAP, not a problem. But as soon as they said, we need to vent him for a rest, my head fell off, because I was like, Charlie was on a vent. He's going to die. And I know, as a nurse, he was just getting rested. His body was just needed a rest. But in my mind was like, no, this can't happen. Obviously, I'd agreed to it. Do whatever you need to do. But it's hard to rationalise and step away out of your emotional brain and into your sensible brain, where you're like, rational brain rather, and you're saying, this isn't going to happen because there's no reason why it would happen. However, you truly think it is going to happen because that's just what's happened before, and your brain has pattern recognitions, doesn't it? And it's like, you know, but I did have a lot of that after with Doll as well, you know, after, because she was me first after Charlie. It was very unrational thought, and I did have to have some counselling around that, just to, like, I wouldn't leave her outside because I thought a seagull would pick her up and take her away, or, you know, oh, you know, the cat was going to come and sit on her face, even though she had a cat net on, and I could see, yeah, that could happen. And it, unreasonable thought. So I went and had some CBT, and they give me homework to do each week. Like, you need to give it to your mum for an hour and then go back and get her. She'll be fine. Of course she was. You know, it's just relearning that actually babies are okay and they do well. And as an nurse, I know the signs of, everyone as a mum knows the signs of a baby becoming, well, most of the time, understands the signs of, you know, lethargic, not feeding very well, all of those. But trauma is hard to negate, isn't it? And so is grief, and so is death. And one of my neighbours has lost a baby. And I really loved that baby, and it was very sudden. And that sort of brought a lot of things up for me, you know, personally, because I wasn't in a work setting. When I've been in a work setting, it's sort of been, I've been able to detach myself and support parents who have gone through grief, and is, you know, be at the bedside of dying children and dying babies, and just be a nurse and not, well, obviously have that emotional connection with the parents and love and treat that baby as it should be, but it's not affected me to the core, where it's obviously baby deaths in my family and friends and stuff that really affects me. And that, you know, although we try and support as much as we can, it's like, it sort of brings a lot up for me.
Of course, because, you know, you've used the phrase as a nurse a few times, but also as a mum, it's a completely different thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a different ball game, isn't it?
And, you know, you saying about that detachment, I would imagine you can't work in the medical profession, especially with children, unless you are able to detach a little bit, because otherwise everyone would just be a mess the entire time and you wouldn't mentally be able to do that job.
Because we have to, don't we? We have to go, this is work. I actually don't know this family and I need to do my best to support them, to give them the right care, the care that the actual reason that I went into being a neonatal nurse is because of Charlie and because of the fantastic care that we received during that time. And I wanted to be able to give that to other parents. So I knew that I had to do that. And by the way, what an honour and a privilege it has been to look after those families in that period of time, which I do feel like having them skills and having that life experience, I've been able to give them what those wonderful nurses and doctors gave me all them years ago.
Amy, what a beautiful reason to do that job. I didn't realise that's the reason that you do what you do.
No, well, I'm not in neonates anymore. But that was I spent like 8 years there and I did really love it. Like, it's a very, very special job and it's a privilege and an honour to have done it.
So going back to acceptance, how do you feel like that is going? I mean, do you feel like the lack of plan and the lack of kind of any kind of idea of what things will look like moving forwards, do you think that's kind of holding you back from being able to process everything properly?
I think so a little bit, Jen. I feel like because we're still in limbo and we're still not really got anything, it's, although I am fully accepting, you know, it's I just feel unsupported and I just want to be the best mum to him that I can be. And I'm finding that not difficult, but am I meeting all his needs? Am I doing the right thing when I'm, say, massaging his hands? Even, you know, I've been doing that for so long and then the doctor was like, no. And I was like, I thought I was doing the right thing at the time. So I just need that guidance to be able to give him exactly what he needs. And then I feel like I'll have the full acceptance. Not to say that I don't feel like I haven't had acceptance, because I do feel like I'm there with it. It's okay.
It's a journey, though.
It is a journey. It is. Some days, you know, you feel like you're smashing it. I'm sure you're the same, Jen. And you're just like, yeah, we're all good. We're all... And then other days you're like, okay, we just need to breathe and we'll get through this. Tomorrow is a new day.
Do you know what, though? You know, you talking about massaging his hands. One thing I would say to you is, just because one doctor has said to you that won't have done anything, that's not necessarily the case, because you're his mum. As a first thing, I think there's instinct there of, I feel like this will help my baby. And secondly, you could speak to a different doctor tomorrow and they'd be like, oh yeah, that absolutely, carry on doing that. That'll definitely be helping.
Absolutely. And I feel like mother's instinct is stronger than anything in the world.
100%.
You know your baby because you've grown them for that 9 months. You've felt them move. You've known when they're not right. Or, for example, when I was having Doll, right, I don't know about you, but Doll was a very quiet baby. She didn't move from about 24 weeks. She just, her heart rate would be like a baseline. It goes slightly on the... And she was very, very quiet. And I kept saying to them, this baby's not right, you know. And they were like, no. She's just a sleepy baby. And I was like, it's not a sleepy baby. Because if that baby was a neonate, it would have wake and sleep cycles of 90 minutes. And I don't feel like that's happening. And they were like, no. And then when she was born, she was small for gestational age. That was like that inner knowledge during that having her. I really realised I know my body more than anyone else does in this world, and I know my babies. And I think that just carries through. Although, yes, I have these awful thoughts, but I think that's just PTSD, whereas like I know my kids inside out, and I know what they need, I know how they need it, and they all need different things at different times. And as a mother, you have that knowledge when you're being a mum, I think.
No, I completely agree, but I also think that what you're feeling is valid in terms of wanting that direction, I guess, of take him to this because it will help his mobility or his this, or don't do this because that could be detrimental. It's, you know, you've got the love and the care there, haven't you? But, you know, sometimes you do need that outside thing of Leo got discharged from physio as soon as he started to walk. Now he's walking. He isn't running. He's walking fast. So like he can be speedy if he wants to. He can get up and down the stairs. He's becoming more steady doing that. You would absolutely never not watch him up and down the stairs. Certainly not down. He can't jump yet, but I'm in my head thinking, yeah, well, that's fine because I can see him progressing. Like he's getting steadier down the stairs. He's able to come down on his feet now holding the banister rather than on his bum. You know, I can see all this progression. And then we had a meeting with school and they were like, we would advise you to refer back to physio or OT. Where that wouldn't have crossed my mind because I'm like, oh no, I can see him progressing. And they're like, no, like we feel that some kind of intervention now again would be helpful. So I
would
just
help him.
Yeah, would help yes. him. But so that it's the same, isn't it? It's somebody else seeing something that maybe you aren't seeing or suggesting something that you wouldn't have thought of.
Yeah, like a little blind spot and someone just shining a light and going, oh, maybe this would help or maybe that would help. Or it's them sort of things, isn't it?
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, everybody needs that. I've just had this conversation with somebody else. Like, I think you can be an expert in your child, but like, I'm not an expert in Down syndrome. There's so much about it that I don't know. And I'm not one of those people that wants to do a deep dive and know everything. I think part of my brain has gone, that won't be helpful to you. Deal with what's in front of you. Because I think I would spiral if I went down that rabbit hole of, I know every single thing there is to know about Down syndrome and what could happen in the future and what could be a problem. That is not helpful for me. And I suppose in your situation, you're not able to find that information because it's not there.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. And I also agree with you just have to deal with in the moment. We're only ever in the moment, aren't we? And I understand that obviously we need to look forward, but we don't need to look forward till, you know, 15 years ahead of us because we don't know where we'll all be in 15 years anyway. So we just need to take it day by day, week by week, year by year.
And I think actually I found that that's been a really good lesson that Leo's taught me. Because before Leo, I was leaping ahead and I wasn't worrying about Alfie and Millie in terms of, oh my God, you know, what if they don't have friends when they go to school? What if, in the same way that if I let myself, I do about Leo, because it's a completely different scenario. But, you know, you do leap, or I certainly did, like, oh, what will the future look like? We'll do this, this, and this, and this. And it's been a great lesson in shut up, stop doing that, because there's no point.
It's like, sort of taught you to be in the present rather than to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you don't know what they're going to achieve. You don't know what they're not going to be able to achieve, but you don't know that with your other children either. You know, their future isn't going to pan out like you'd pictured it because it isn't your future to control, is it? And it's the same with our little ones as well. It's going to look different to what we thought. And I know it's not as black and white and as simple as that, but it's the same principle, isn't it? Is that future isn't promised to us the way that we thought it would look. And you just have to, I suppose, go along for the ride, don't you?
Yeah. But also I think in these lessons, we learn that, you know, children can be okay till they're 13 and then they could find out they have cancer and then they could, you know, you just don't know. You don't know. And then, you know, your life could change forever from that day forth. So we just have to be in the moment and pray that everything's going to be okay.
And that's the thing. I saw something the other day, and actually there was a lot of stuff came up because of that YouTuber and his wife. I'm sure you saw them, who chose to terminate their pregnancy after they found out the baby had Down syndrome. And I have done an episode on this, but just to be very clear, I am pro-choice. I don't judge their decision. I have, well, you actually have. I haven't been in that situation where I've been told that while I was pregnant. What I objected to was the way in which they worded the statement and the misinformation that was in that statement. That's the thing that I had the problem with and that I found quite difficult to read. But I think because of that, I saw a lot of content around it. And one thing that I found really interesting that I saw was any of us could become a parent to a child with a disability at any time. So me and you have become parents to a child with a known disability from the very beginning. And although it took a while, a long time, for you to know what that was, what it was called, you were aware that something was different. I knew that Leo had Down syndrome from day 5 of him being alive. But like you said, somebody's child could lose a limb, something, there could be a brain injury, something could happen. And at any second, any of us could become, anyone could become a parent to a child with a disability.
You know, you don't think about that until it happens, do you?
Of course not.
You never put yourself in that position. I'm grateful that I've known what it is and we haven't just picked it up by chance later on, do you know what I mean? Because I feel like I've had that preparation from during pregnancy, whereas you didn't get that that time to digest, that time for them big conversations. You know, you and Ben sitting that you already had Leo. You know, it's so different, isn't it, Gem? And it does take a lot of time, and you didn't have that time. But then again, people who are pushed into disability through brain injury, through trauma, you know, car accidents, whatever, they don't have that either. And we're all just doing the best we can, aren't we? We're all just trying our hardest to be good parents, to help our kids achieve and be the best person that they can be. It doesn't matter what their siblings are doing. It doesn't matter if their siblings are in, you know, Oxford or Cambridge or whatever, and they're in, you know, Liverpool Community College. Who gives a who gives a toss if they are different? As long as they're happy, that's all that matters. They're happy and they're loved.
Right, Amy, I finished the podcast in the same way with all of my guests, with the same two questions. And the first question is, what's the best piece of advice that you've been given along the way?
I was thinking about this before because you sent it over and I was thinking,
I think it's nice to have a heads up.
Yeah,
It's a big question.
It is a big question. And you know what? Funny enough, I had a really interesting conversation with somebody yesterday who is a fantastic parent, not a parent to disabled children, but I was like, what's your secret? Because his children are older than mine. They're like 17 and 19. I was like, what's your secret? And he said, love and openness. And I was like, can you explain a little bit more? And he was like, yeah. He was like, I don't shout when they mess up or they're silly, or I just say, well, I always think to myself, what would have I done in that situation? We're all here. It's all our first time. No one's got a book. No one's read the rule book. No one's knows the path ahead. So everyone should be given grace, no matter who they are, especially our children, because I've been very silly in my past. So kids just need love, and it's okay. Anything that comes up, we can deal with. I will love you no matter what. Anything, it's unconditional. So bring it to me. I'm not going to judge you because I've probably done most of the silly things that you've done. It's okay. I want them to know that I'm always there no matter what happens.
Yeah, it's lovely that. And my final question is, what do you know now? And I know that you're only, or despite you, you know, saying very early days what you thought the diagnosis was, and as it turns out, you were right. But I know that you're only early days in receiving an official diagnosis for Don. But is there anything that you know now that you wish you'd known when you got the diagnosis, or when you were thinking that that's what it might be?
Everything's going to be okay. Everything works out. Just having that confidence and that, and not having to worry every night before I went to bed, and just thinking, actually, as long as it's not life limiting, like he's going to die, we can deal with anything. Give me anything. Just give me my live child that I've grown. Anything. And that's it, really. I think just knowing that.
That's just made me well up for like the fourth time in our chat, Amy. That's a really beautiful way to finish, I think. Thank you so much. I've really, really enjoyed chatting to you.
Thank you. I've loved it as well. And it's been a lovely catch up.
I know it has. It has. And I still need to meet Don. I'd love to do that.
Oh, yes, we will. We'll come up and see you in the summer holidays.
I love that chat with Amy. I hope you enjoyed it as well. I really appreciated how open she was, and it was really nice to get to know her story properly, despite the fact that me and Amy do know each other. Now, the charity that she mentioned in that episode, I will make sure that the link to that is in the show notes if you would like to look at that charity, or maybe you know somebody that could help. As always, if you're enjoying the podcast, I would love it if you would like, subscribe, rate, review, all of those things, however it works on your podcast app. It helps more people to find the podcast, which ultimately is the goal. And also, remember, I have got my audio affirmations available to buy on Shopify. They're £7, and they're something that you can listen to, you know, ideally you'd listen to, you know, in a quiet room with a nice candle burning and serenity all around you. But as we know, that's not always possible. So there's something you could listen to maybe when you're out with the pram, or if you're on a dog walk, if you're waiting outside the school to pick your kids up, whatever it is, and however they can fit into your life. I tried to make them as accessible as possible. So the Shopify link is on the Instagram in the bio. It's at the Send Mum Club if you aren't already following. This is me signing off for the summer. So I'll be back in September when the kids are back in school. I will be recording some fabulous episodes in that time though. So I'll have some great ones ready to go for you in September, whatever you're doing over the summer. I hope you have a great one, whatever that looks like, because obviously Instagram and feeling like everybody's doing these amazing things and having these perfect days out. Let's all try and give ourselves grace and enjoy the summer that is right for our families. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you in September.